Welcome to another episode of the Richards Report. I'm Ted Richards. Once a quarter, I like to catch up with Six Park co-founder and co-CEO Pat Garrett and have a chat about what's been going on in the markets. And at the time of recording, it's a few days before Christmas in 2020. It's the end of another year, so I think it's an appropriate time to do a year in review. I don't want to ruin the ending for you, but it's kind of been a bit of a shit show. A strong theme throughout this chat will be the perils of trying to predict the future, the importance of diversifying, and staying invested despite the day-to-day, week-to-week volatility. As always, usual disclosures, this episode is just for educational purposes only and does not qualify as personal advice, and people may hold positions in the companies discussed. And as you may have heard in a previous episode, this year for Christmas, I'm asking for those giving presents, if you could please subscribe and review, I'd really appreciate it. I believe you can do it while you're even listening in right now. I'm also aware, as I mentioned earlier, that Christmas is likely to have come and gone while you're listening in, but all good. I'll still take the review, especially if it's a good one. And whilst you're having a few beers over summer, make sure you pump up the show to a friend. Okay, enough formalities and self-promotion. Let's get into it for this episode.
You're listening to The Richards Report, where we will speak with investment experts from around the country. We will cut through the jargon to allow you to make more insightful investment decisions for your future. This is The Richards Report.
Welcome to another episode. I'm here with Six Park co-founder and co-CEO, Pat Garrett. Welcome back to another episode of The Richards Report.
Thanks, Ted. Always a pleasure to be here, and particularly as we approach, hopefully, a bit of a break that everybody needs.
Before we get into what's going on here at home in Australia, Pat, how's it going back in your original home over in the US?
Well, probably not all that surprisingly, the answer is not all that great. Obviously, COVID remains growing and out of control, though the onset of the vaccine has got a measure of confidence for people. But it's to borrow your words earlier, Ted, it's a bit of a shit show. and I shouldn't laugh when I say that because it's serious. Yeah, it's been a heck of a year with the election and all the noise. I think people over there are just really looking for a break and want to get into next year.
Yeah, well, and we're going to break it down quarter by quarter shortly as to what's happened over the course of this year. But before we get into it, I like to keep an eye on the analytics of this podcast. And Pat, moving into the top four for international listeners,
fantastic,
is Canada. So Pat, I may need to start including a segment on Justin Trudeau and what's going on up there too, because seems like we've got some listeners in Canada. Okay, enough about that. Year in review.
Oh, you're done with Canada?
Oh, yeah, we're done with Canada.
Canada listeners, you can sign off now.
Okay. Year in review. Let's get into it. Pat, I'd like to start off by, what has this year reminded us? And I haven't said tortoise. I want to chat about what it's reminded us.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Ted, because what it has reminded us of is not necessarily anything particularly new. I think the headline item would be don't sell into a market downturn or crash, which is sometimes easier said than done, given the emotions involved in it. But we'll cover this in a moment. But we saw probably the fastest decline in market of the magnitude, I think, in the history of the markets in terms of speed, followed by an incredible recovery. So a lot of people did sell at or near the bottom of that downturn and have missed a subsequent, albeit probably somewhat surprising, serious rebound.
You're exactly right. So as I mentioned before, let's break it down quarter by quarter and start off with the first 3 months of the year. For those that have forgotten, the market actually opened up at the start of January and it was flying along for the first 7 weeks. It actually peaked around the 20th of February, and by then it was already up 7.5% in around just 6 or 7 weeks.
Yeah.
And but before we get into what then happened, a little context, what was going on back then when that market peaked on the 20th of Feb. We had our first confirmed coronavirus case in Australia actually on the 25th of January. So what we can see there is the market actually kept on going up until February the 20th, even though there was active cases in Australia. And just a quick comment, Pat, before I keep going. How good is hindsight?
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking as you were saying that, Ted, back at that point too, I think there was a prevailing view that Donald Trump would probably get reelected.
Yes, he was flying.
He was flying because the stock market was going well, unemployment was low, and interest rates were low, and people probably would have said they felt better off than they did 4 years earlier, and very hard to unseat a president in that situation. So the part of the tailwind of the stock market was, you know, a business-friendly U.S. president. Mm. How times have changed.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So the market peaked 20th of Feb. Let's have a look at what was going on at that time is when the market peaked. So I went back and had a look at some articles that were being written. I can't remember if this was in The Age or the Sydney Morning Herald, most likely probably both. But the headline was, Australian coronavirus vaccine goes into test production. I had a read of the article. 15 people at the time were infected in Australia. The article said it was too early to speculate on what impact the virus might have on the Tokyo Olympics in July. And Italy looked like it was the country around the world that was outside of China that was most affected in terms of parts of the north of the country had gone into effective lockdown. Only two deaths in Italy at the time. And the Italian government had cancelled sporting events up north for the soccer, the Serie A football game. So I just want to provide a bit of context about what was some of the headlines and the news that was going on at the time when the market peaked, and we started to see the market start to reflect more some of the risk that was starting to play out. Pat, the next 30 days, things quickly escalate.
Yeah.
March 10, something kind of historic happens when it's the first time someone famous is infected. The first question is, a question without notice, do you remember who that person was that was kind of that first?
I'm going to guess Tom Hanks.
You're exactly right. Yep. I recall he was actually in Australia too at the time.
Yeah, and I think his wife as well.
Yeah, That was March 10. Over the next 9 trading days, the market drops 22%.
Yeah.
So the market was already dropping, but interesting what that Tom Hanks effect in this story may have contributed to the negative sentiment, confidence, and panic. So the market ends up bottoming at the 23rd of March. As the market crashes, we're down 35%, Pat, in just a matter of weeks.
And noting that's virtually every asset class.
Just across the board. Pat, I'm giving you a bit of a layup here. We're down 35% in a matter of weeks. What do you think the mindset is for a lot of investors back at that time?
It's a layup, but it could be either way. I mean, there was obviously a lot of fear in the market, but the mindset probably is, you know, this is a buying opportunity. If there's any positive news, I'm going to start buying the stocks that are benefiting from the pandemic effect.
There's certainly that, and there's also that people that go, I got to get out. We're seeing all sorts of behavior. And Pat, that's what I want to speak to. After going down 35% over 3 or 4 weeks, the next 4 days, the market's up 11%.
Yep.
And which we have spoken about on this show many times, that often the best days fall within 2 weeks of the worst days. And what we've just spoken about there takes us through to the end of the first quarter. What a crazy first quarter it was. Second and third quarters, Pat, there's still so much ongoing uncertainty, mayhem, sadness, but it's not really being reflected in the stock market. So before we speak about those quarters, a few reminders for people out there. Stock market is forward-looking, so it's not about what's happening today, what might be in a headline. Professionals normally take a view of what's going on from, say, 12 months from now. And we were hearing that vaccine progress, despite being slow, was happening. And the other reminder, which I just want to mention, is a bit of a theme in this episode, is of the perils of trying to time the market, and short-term market movements aren't always rational. But Pat, let's just go back to what was going on and sentiment. Since that bottom on March 23, and I should qualify, I'm using the ASX 200 when I say the market. It's brought forward an incredible period of returns.
Yeah.
At the time of recording, what is it? 21st of December. The market has since bounced back up 43%. History says at some point in the future, there's a strong chance a bit of false memory effect will start to play out in the same way people look back at the financial crisis and annoyed they didn't invest more at the time. But don't kid yourself. We were all incredibly nervous as to what the future held back then. You know, Hollywood celebrities were getting infected and infection rate was growing around the world and we couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel, especially for us down here in Victoria.
Yeah.
Pat, we could speak about second quarter, third quarter, and fourth quarter as so much happened in those quarters too. But to round this all out, Pat, I'm going to ask you a question. Is there ever a sign when it's the right time to invest?
I think the right time to invest is when you have capital to deploy into the market. So the question is, how much do you put into growth assets and how much do you put into defensive assets? And that depends partly on personal circumstances and partly on what you think of the market outlook.
I might just stop you there, Pat. For those not familiar with that growth defensive terminology,
yep.
What's an example of a defensive asset? What's an example of a growth asset?
So a defensive asset would be something like a bond, which is a lot less risky than a growth asset like shares,
yep.
Stocks. And when people tend to think of investing, they tend to sort of think everything investing is just shares. When the reality is there's a variety of different, what they call asset classes, which range from low risk, low return to higher risk, higher return. So you mentioned diversification earlier. Diversification has been incredibly important. And we'll talk about rebalancing because that gets into it as well. But people tend to think of it as fairly binary. I'm either in the market or I'm out, when in fact you can be invested and it just allocated across different aspects of the market. But there's something I just thought I'd touch on, Ted. You mentioned when you were talking about the phase, sort of the cycle of the year and the quarters, and looking for a light at the end of the tunnel and the way markets tend to look forward. I think it's important to note that you're right that the market rebound took place while there was a lot of really frightening and unknown stuff going on. But what's important to note is that the central banks around the world were all saying at the same time, we will do whatever it takes to get through this.
Yep.
And that was a pretty important message that was getting through to investors. And so I think when you try to think about like what was driving this cycle over the course of the year after the fall off, one, you obviously had initially at least led by the massive technology companies and the companies that were benefiting from work from home and whatnot. But you also had all the central banks saying, we're just going to protect the markets from falling, which gave people a level of confidence, to your point, that if you fast forward 12 months, we're going to be okay. So on the heels of a phenomenally fast 30%+ sell-off, people thought, I'm not going to make any money sitting on cash, so I might as well put it, you know, invested in the market. So whether that's, you know, how rational that is or whatnot, it was, but seems to have been the dynamic over the time.
Yeah. And we won't go down the rabbit hole of Bitcoin, but it also got the Bitcoin investors quite excited by what it might mean for that.
Yeah.
Pat, let's kind of zoom out a bit from quarter to quarter and just kind of look at 2020 as a whole right now. Who reacted well this year, do you think?
Yeah. I was having a look at an article on Nike, actually, which I found very interesting because it was actually an article about marketing and branding. And Nike, whilst a number of its competitors like Adidas and others were reluctant to shut down the bricks and mortars because they just didn't want to bite the bullet. Nike did, and they actually started a campaign, a really successful marketing campaign with the slogan, "Stay inside, play for the world." It was sort of short-term pain for long-term gain, because what it did is it built an incredible sense of confidence and loyalty and sort of a community alignment with the brand, so that when a measure of confidence came back into the market, Nike was a beneficiary of that. And it's sort of their stock price got hit early, but they went from, I think, about $100 down to 60, so down 40% in the reaction, and it's now at about $140 a share.
So back up over 100%.
More than doubled since then. And so I think that was actually really smart management to focus on the way they position the product and the brand.
They really know how to speak to their market well, Nike.
Yeah.
Not so much at a global company level like Nike. I read about this Chinese restaurant in New York that did a fascinating thing where they studied behavior of what the response was in cities that had been affected by COVID, in particular in China, where they were affected first, and what the response was for those people in those cities and how they experienced it. And they saw that panic stockpiling of food and goods was occurring. So what did they do, this Chinese restaurant in New York? They moved and pivoted their whole business to make frozen dumplings and large family meals, and they made an absolute killing. Yeah, they would have. So I thought that was quite fascinating. Pat, it's been a big year for tech all round, and I just want to mention some businesses. Twitter, Shopify, Snapchat, some huge global businesses. Well, guess what? AirPods made more money this year than all of those three businesses combined. So if AirPods were in the Fortune 500, they would be a company in themselves.
And we say that with both of us sitting here with AirPods.
Pat, all right, we've spoken about who reacted well. Who got lucky this year?
The one that jumps to mind to me is probably Disney, given that if you think of the theme parks and the other streams of business that they had all got hammered with the pandemic, but they had the good fortune, smarts and or luck to introduce Disney Plus, I think it was. I don't know when you...
Yeah, I think it was 2019 that came out. And you're exactly right.
It basically just has completely transformed their business in a way that thrived in the unfortunate backdrop of COVID. Otherwise, I think they'd probably be bankrupt right now.
Yeah, exactly. For a business that makes money on theme parks, tourism, and traditionally people
gathering
inside cinemas, I think what it can speak to, Pat, is they diversified.
Yeah, exactly.
They diversified, and that is a bit of a theme that's throughout this episode.
Yeah.
So there's businesses that have made their own luck, like that Chinese businesses and Nike, those that got lucky, like say Disney Plus or Disney. And then there's some businesses that are doing it well and it kind of doesn't make sense. Pat, can you think of any examples on this that have just kind of got lucky and you didn't see it coming?
The one that just jumps out at me, because I still don't understand it, is Bitcoin, I think.
Yep. Yep.
I don't really have a whole lot more to say because I don't understand. I haven't tried to figure out how to play the Bitcoin game other than to read how it's going.
Yep.
So that would probably fall into the category on this one. Yeah. What about you?
It has been quite interesting to keep an eye on Bitcoin. It's not so much a company, but more of an industry which has been incredibly resilient to be in a global recession. And new car sales in Australia.
Yeah.
From what I'm hearing, flying, especially the larger cars, the people movers, as Australians, maybe it's an outcome of this K-shaped recovery, not having the...
massive family trips overseas.
Yeah. They're going on car trip. I'm actually in the market for a bigger car with another child on the way. We need something that can fit three car seats. And
congratulations on getting the third car seat in the back. By the way, I've already congratulated you.
Thanks.
The impending.
Yeah, well, addition. I'm pretty pumped to being able to squeeze that car seat in. But yeah, the fact that there's a waiting list.
Yeah.
For a new car in a recession. So yeah. That's something that I certainly didn't see coming. Pat, let's go back to back in time to the start of the year. And let's imagine that on New Year's Day, someone was to come to you and tell you that we're about to go into a global recession as a global pandemic is about to hit with a virus. It's going to spread around the world. And in this little weird backdrop in the story, whatever it is that I'm giving you, they only give you two investment options. The first one is one of the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world, and the likely first producer of the vaccine.
Yeah.
Let's call it Pfizer.
Okay.
And the other option is a high-end luxury car company that has had funding issues in the recent past. Okay. Pat, the start of the year.
Which do I pick?
Which do you pick?
I'd go to the pharmaceutical company, although I
have, of course you would.
I'm afraid of which car company you're probably referring to.
I'm sure that you're out. You know that it's not just pure lucky why I've only chosen those two options. But if you were to choose the pharmaceutical company, Pat, at the time of recording, since the start of the year, Pfizer is up 4.5% with all the tailwinds that you would think someone that is producing a global vaccine may have.
Yeah.
If you chose the second option, the luxury car company,
and it happened to be
Tesla, you're up over 700%.
Yeah.
And I may add an extra layer to that. If you chose the most traded stock on eToro this year, the Chinese electric car maker NIO Inc., you're up over 1,000% this year. Pat, so much has been spoken about Tesla and the year that it's had. Just interesting, not so much from a valuation point of view, but how much of this is just herd mentality versus sound fundamental analysis and research?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we're getting into the sort of potentially the Robin Hood effect type stuff, but there, you know, obviously Elon Musk has sort of a cult-like following. There's a lot of hype around what they're doing. You know, some of it probably pretty well justified. But certainly it seems to be not a stock that's looking a year forward, a stock that's maybe looking 5 or 10 years forward. And, it, you know, if they get it right, maybe it's worth what it is today, but it certainly seems ambitious. And usually if and when there is a pullback in the stock, it's, you know, people are getting, it's the people who are getting in late who are suffering that drop, but time will tell.
We might get to some predictions later on in the conversation, but I've got a funny feeling 2021 isn't going to be a quiet year for Tesla. I've got no idea if it's going to, you know, the business is going to go from one strength to another strength.
Yep.
Well, maybe it's not so much the business has been going strength to strength. It's certainly the share price.
Yeah.
I've just got a funny feeling there's more to play out here.
Well, there's I have read a few of the recent articles on them, and they seem to focus a bit on how many cars they're selling in China as part of the barometer of the measure of traction they're getting or not. And that number has been somewhat underwhelming relative to what people expected. So I think you're right. I didn't realize actually how many cars they're actually selling, you know, the tens of thousands. I kind of have always thought it's more about the future than the now, but they are selling a lot of cars. And,
thing to sell a car. I don't know if they're actually keeping up with the production though. But anyway, neither of us are kind of...
Here's where I think maybe is the right landing point. If they have a few disappointing announcements, it's ripe for a major sell-off. But that's a big if.
Yeah.
I want to throw one at you though, Ted.
Yep.
Unscripted.
Yep.
If I were to say at the beginning of the year, that same backdrop of the pandemic, a recession and a pandemic.
Yeah.
And I were to say to you, you can invest, you've got a choice between two stocks. One is a global consumer products company that focuses on disinfectants.
Yep.
And another is one that makes substitute meat products. Which would you have picked? Disinfectant?
I'm assuming the latter might be Beyond Meat or something.
Possibly,
like that.
Possibly. Yeah. The first one I'll say is Clorox.
Okay, I'm certainly going the first one.
For what it's worth, Clorox. So Beyond Meat has outperformed Clorox. You won't be surprised to hear now. Beyond Meat is up 93% year to date, and Clorox is up 32% year to date.
So. Still two good options.
Yeah, they're very good. Yeah. You'd be happy with either one.
I'll take the 32%, but when you put it next to the 92,
I would have flipped the two around.
Pat, there's two other companies that have had interesting 2020s that I want to speak to. One, what looks to be a fantastic business model. The other, the complete opposite. The fantastic business model is the Airbnb IPO, which both of these two businesses that I'm going to speak to, I'm using them to highlight how hard it is, the valuation piece.
Yeah.
So investment bankers priced the IPO accordingly. And when it went public, it went up over 100% leaving a lot on the table for the equity holders at that IPO. So that was a fascinating IPO that's played out this year. The other business I want to speak to is not so much a quality business, but it's just had a crazy 2020, is Kodak.
Yeah.
Can kind of show you how irrational the market is in that close to bankruptcy and a rumor that went around this business. Well, one, turns out they still existed. And two, very quickly, it went from $2 to $60 off the back of not much.
Yeah, well, it was a rumor, but based in some fact, if I'm not mistaken, as far as the production of products that go into the drug manufacturing,
And I think Trump may have been involved.
A $900 million contract with the government to provide elements of drug manufacturing.
Yeah. The takeaways from this, these examples, it's one thing to point to a good or a bad business. But if you're stock picking, determining the important valuation piece is just it's so body hard.
Yeah.
And I think that's another, I won't say lesson that we've learned in 2020, because we've always known that. It's just a reminder of how hard that valuation piece is, even if you think it's a good business.
Yeah. I think, Ted, you raise the Airbnb IPO. And I think given the number of IPOs that have phenomenally been rolled out in the last several months, it's important to note that it's pretty common that IPOs get priced in such a way that in the day or days after they list, there can be quite dramatic movements. And in theory, you're right with the comment about leaving money on the table with something like what happened with Airbnb. But you really need to look about a month or two later and see where it actually settles.
Yep.
Because there can be a lot of hype around IPOs and it pops and people wonder why didn't they price it higher. But the reality is, more times than not, it's actually get back to that listing price a few months later. So it is better to price it appropriately. And, you know, if hype pushes it up because everybody on the planet wants to own a share of it, that's fine. But eventually people take profits and then it kind of normalizes a bit. Lots of IPOs. So.
Yeah. And I'm speaking about an IPO that's going through the proper due diligence compliance process. As opposed to a company that's going public through a SPAC, which...
And they keep going.
Yeah. So, and that's probably another story that seems to play out over the course of 2020 is the popularity of SPACs. Pat, we've touched on this a couple of times, but let's have a quick chat about rebalancing and what may have been happening for Six Park clients this year with the volatility and price movements in between asset classes. And when I say asset classes... things like Australian and international shares compared to some of those defensive asset classes before, like, say, cash and bonds.
Yeah. Well, the rebalancing, for those that aren't familiar with that, is it involves, if you've got a target mix of asset classes, asset allocation, and over time, one asset class, for example, outperforms another. And so you effectively drift above and below what your target allocation is for each asset class. Rebalancing is selling off a portion of what has outperformed to buy a portion of what has underperformed to get you back sort of to your targets. And so it's kind of an embedded way of selling high and buying low. You don't need to do it all the time, but if you're a medium to long-term investor, it's quite an effective portfolio management strategy. So what would have happened with Six Park investors, two of the asset classes that we use in our portfolio construction that we like a lot and still do, are global infrastructure and global listed property. They sort of straddle, to some extent, growth versus defensive, depending on how you look at them. But they both took it on the chin because of the nature of the asset classes and what the pandemic sort of wrought upon those businesses. So they underperformed during the early part of the year. So for clients whose portfolios were rebalanced, they probably, on a relative basis, bonds, cash yield, and to some extent, surprisingly, emerging markets fared okay relative to most other asset classes. Would have sold off a little bit of those asset classes to buy a little bit of highly, highly depressed priced global infrastructure and global real estate, which I'm confident will and already have started to recover. So both our clients and anyone that has, you know, diversified portfolio, it's a phenomenal example of how powerful rebalancing is by selling off a little bit of what has performed relatively well to automatically buy what's been hammered, because it's based a bit on the theory that things revert to their mean over time, which they will and should. And those that didn't exit the market to sit on the sidelines of cash, but rather use rebalancing or changing their growth defensive split, but staying invested, will really benefit from over the medium to long term.
I guess so many of Australians really pretty much only look at two asset classes, Aussie blue chip shares and Aussie property. But there's so many other asset classes out there, in which you touched on global property and infrastructure. I think in portfolios, they might be at most in the vicinity of a 10% allocation, but it just provides a level of diversification. And the fact is, you want your asset classes and investments to be uncorrelated. And what I mean by that is to be moving at different rates in different parts of the business cycle to help smooth out your returns. And often when one asset class might be underperforming, others such as international equities, which have a high allocation to that tech sector, might be outperforming. And it can just help smooth returns month to month, quarter to quarter, year to year.
Yep.
So, okay, Pat, that's what's happened so far in 2020. Pat, tell us what's going to happen in 2021.
There will be 360 some days. It's an interesting one because I'm not sure in my career I've ever been, I wouldn't say not confused, but where I've ever seen a market where you could really make a case for why things are heading in a better direction and or reasons why to be a little worried about the future. But I think the tailwinds that we've sort of touched on of lower for longer interest rates, the vaccine, plural, that are starting to make their way into where they need to get to, and central banks, fiscal and monetary policy, and to a certain extent, a measure of stability, hopefully in the U.S. government, are reasons to be optimistic that we're going to ride through the storm. You know, to your point earlier, looking through the immediate near term to some extent, so I would expect that we'll end up 2021 higher than where it started, but I would also expect, especially since there's been sort of a fairly steady grind up for the last 9 months, the markets will do what they always do, and they have their moments where they spit the dummy. And to the point earlier, some bad news will spook people.
Yep.
It'll be interesting to see what happens to the... I'm all for free trading and accessibility and affordability for retail investors, as long as there's the right guardrails around managing risk and education. But it will be interesting. The Reddit and the chat rooms are really hot with a lot of positivity and see, told you so, and just made this much money on da-da-da. And it's great if people are engaged like that. But what's really interesting is to watch what happens in that environment when things go pear-shaped, which markets do. That's just part of the cycle. So I think there'll be a bit of that in 2021, but I think there's reason to think that the markets will be higher at the end than at the start, which not everyone agrees with.
If there's one lesson that this year has taught us, it's that the perils of trying to predict the future. Yeah. When it comes to investing, we take a long-term view. We know there's going to be ups and downs, and it doesn't take much for things to completely change over the short term. On the way here, I actually thought it's quite a good idea to go back and listen to the first episode of this year when we caught up. I think the episode came out at the 23rd of March.
So we're still in the midst of the shitstorm, so to speak.
Not only were we in the midst, I think like at the time of recording, we were very close to peak anxiety.
Yeah.
And Pat, to go back and have a listen, nothing has changed.
Yeah.
You know, nothing wavers. We know that there's going to be volatility going forward. The importance of adding to your portfolio over time and not trying to time the market.
Still resonates.
It still resonates. Yeah.
I remember that
podcast,
Ted. I remember we'd had an investment committee meeting not long before then. And you're right, there was a lot of fear and trepidation. And I think it's, you know, I think it's worth pointing out, you and I are in this industry, so we have a measure of, you know, we have a view and we work with some pretty phenomenal people, but we're also human, right? Yeah. So when the markets and the kind of global activity that was happening at the time, because, you know, we get as scared as anyone does, right?
We're human, we're not robots.
And so, yeah, exactly. So I guess the point is, it's all right to feel that anxiety. It's all right to feel that stress. But what diversification and confidence in an approach to investing does is it de-stresses that that concern.
Especially investing according to your risk profile.
Yeah. And, you know, we talk a lot about timing the market. That and we've said it before, and I'll say it again, the problem with timing the market is you've got to know when to get out and when to get back in. You've got to get two things right.
Yeah, good luck.
And I think if you look back at, you know, we're looking back on this year, if it proves anything in quite dramatic fashion, because it feels like we've probably gone through, you know, what might take, you know, 5 years of markets to go through before you can look back on them and talk cogently about lessons learned and whatnot. We learned them in like a couple months.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen often. And I think it really amplifies the benefit of patience and diversification.
Yeah.
Just to pound away on those points.
Yeah, Pat. So we've had the full catch up. So if you'd like to go back and kind of listen to
where we're at
any of the end of those quarters, be it the end of the first quarter or a mid-year review.
Maybe in a year and a half when we're doing, we'll look at Beyond Meat and Clorox again. And Tesla.
Exactly. Well, outside of those four episodes, Pat, there's a couple of other episodes that I just want to point to if anyone haven't listened to those. One of which is, did a great chat with Morgan Housel, where we kind of spoke a bit about the lessons that can be learned from history. Morgan, he's a fantastic writer, so I encourage you to check out that episode with Scott Galloway, where I spoke with Scott about what's really happened with the behavioral change and uptake of technology. There was an episode that came out in February with Ben Carlson from Ritholtz Wealth Management that listeners may be familiar with, that has the fantastic podcast Animal Spirits.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. And I spoke with Ben about scams and frauds. And I think that's fascinating because there's a lot of lessons that can be learned from that. But also another one with Paul Benson, a friend of the show, and who's a great financial advisor. And we had a chat about the benefits of getting advice when it comes to investments in your money. So check out the back catalogue if you're interested in any of those episodes, or go to sixpark.com.au for show notes on those episodes too. And we also have plenty of good content on the site under the insights section if you're interested in doing a bit of reading over the summer. We have also recently launched our ethical portfolios. So if you're interested in ethical social governance, the ESG style of investing, you can check out those portfolios there. Pat, thanks again for chatting for another episode of the Richards Report.
Ted, always a pleasure to join. I look forward to the next one and reflecting on these comments, because we live in unusual times.
Yeah, they are unusual times. And my wife and I are having a baby in a few days. So apologies in advance if I sound a bit tired on the next episode.
Okay. Good luck to you and Al.
Oh, thanks. See you next time on the Richards Report.